probably isn't another word that conjures up as many images. In our families, we find some of our most joyous and precious moments. In our families, we also find some of the most troubling and difficult relationships and the most traumatic of experiences. Relationships between husband and wife, relationships with children, with in-laws, and with other family members are all so acutely important to us that they become a great source of humor and a great source of storytelling. Rodney Dangerfield said that his son is so ugly that when he was born, the doctors slapped his mother. He says that he takes his wife with him everywhere he goes, but she keeps finding her way home. He says that he's discovered how to make their marriage work. They go to some great place twice a week. She goes on Tuesdays, he goes on Thursdays. In our families, we experience some of the closest and most difficult relationships that we have to deal with. Let's talk for a few moments about some stress handling techniques for maintaining a positive sense, the good relationships, and the good experiences that we have one with another. And let's understand that like any well-functioning machine, some preventive maintenance can often prevent a deterioration into major problems. One of the things that has been given consideration in the press in recent years has been the concept of preventive counseling. Marriage counselors often report that they can't do much for couples when they see them because as a member of the counseling fraternity, they're not really called upon until the last possible moment. One partner or the other waits too long, not wanting to admit to anybody that they've got family problems. So they ignore the problems, they put them aside, they hide them in the closet, and they just don't want to talk about it with anybody. But finally, when the marriage is acutely troubled, they may go to the marriage counselor. Marriage counselors say it's really difficult for them to help a marriage very much at that stage. Preventive counseling is a concept that suggests that the time to see a counselor is when the couple doesn't need one, when the marriage and relationship is strong and healthy. At that point, the couple can comfortably discuss what they're doing right and develop an understanding and perspective of their relationship that will help them to better deal with any problems they may encounter in the future. Recently, a Hollywood starlet was discussed in the pages of the press because she and her fiancé had decided they would seek some preventive marriage counseling before they actually got married. Living in the Hollywood environment where the divorce rate among celebrities is so high, they didn't want to lose the positive relationship that they had, and so they were going to a series of structured programs where they could learn what it was that made things tick for them. If your marriage is going well right now, I congratulate you and recommend this concept of preventive counseling. Sometimes various church groups or religious groups will offer marriage encounter weekends, and those are usually for families where things are going pretty well. It's a chance just to stay in touch and to get back in contact with one another. A second concept that might have some preventive value in terms of keeping things on track is to make sure that you're providing an apartness, a separateness, one from the other, a chance to each be your own person. Can you remember back in that dating stage of your premarital days when the agony of being apart was so acute that you just couldn't stand it? You counted the minutes, the hours, the days, until you would be together again. Can you remember, as I do, the long-distance phone conversations and the money that you funneled into the phone company every month when your beloved lived in another city? The whole goal and the great dream about the marriage days to come was that you would now be together all the time. Isn't that wonderful? And then you got married. And for the first 3 months, it was absolutely terrific. Every moment was spent together. And the first 6 months went tolerably well, too. And the first year wasn't all that bad. But you know, after about 18 months, togetherness was wearing a little thin because you had seen her in curlers once too often and she had heard you burp at midnight about 16 times too often, and there got to be an element of this closeness that really wasn't all that romantic or terrific or wonderful anymore. So now the question is, aside from a divorce, how can we spend a little time apart? In fact, to be strong together and to maintain a meaningful relationship with each other, there is a need for individual expression, for some privacy, and for some solitude. Where can you go in your home to be alone. Aside from the concept of separate spaces within the home, is the question of how much privacy can you have? Can you lead your own life? Do you have to do everything that your partner wants to do on the weekends? Do you ever do anything separately? Is there something that you want to do in terms of expressing who you are? Some of you who have been married 5 and 10 and 15 years are really becoming unsettled. Some of you married a woman who at that time in her life wanted to fulfill the great American dream, which was to have exactly 2.0 children, one boy, one girl, have the chintz curtains and a little bungalow and all the rest. She played that game for a few years. Now she's decided she wants to go back to school and open up a business competitive to your own. Somehow she's changed. What is happening with this person? The same applies to the husbands. He may also be going through some kind of metamorphosis, and it almost seems like, hey, you're changing the deal we started out with. I thought you were going to be like this. The fact is, he has changed and become somebody quite different. Somebody that you don't understand. What is happening, of course, is simply a continuing growth. People do not stay the same. They move and grow into new areas of expression. The self continues to unfold, and like any rose, it has a bud stage, it has an opening stage, it has a full flower stage, and it may even have a drooping stage, but all of that is part of that person over time. Is your marriage such that you are now developing the possibilities and the openings and the signals that say it is okay for you to be you? You don't have to live up to each other's expectations 100% of the time. And this really takes some maturity. Some people, to assist their marriage, have created a family constitution. Think about what constitutional government is. It is based on a statement of principles and beliefs and some procedures and practices that are going to be followed. The United States is among the oldest of constitutional governments in the world, and the basic message of the U.S. Constitution is that in the midst of whatever problems occur, whatever issues become current in the day, the Constitution remains as a continuing reference point. If you have a new question, if the situations and conditions have changed, that's okay. You can interpret those new conditions and situations in light of the Constitution and its principles. And no one is above the Constitution. The President of the United States is not above the Constitution. The husband is not above the Constitution. The wife is not above the Constitution. Now, in my own marriage, we have done that. I'm not recommending it for everyone. But on 3 pages, we wrote out a few things that we believed about finances, a few things we believed about the relationship of wife to husband and husband to wife, of children to parents and parents to children. We've written out a few things about how we'll handle conflicts when they occur. We've written out some things about what we want to do with our marriage, what its objectives and long-term goals are. That may seem a little cold, a little abstract, and yet it really is reflecting on paper things that we feel, things that we believe. All we're doing is trying to define our mutual roles, our individual roles, and how we relate one to the other. And like any good constitution, we amend it from time to time. But it helps to have a reference point. At the point where you're having a little rocky ride in the relationship, if you can go to the Constitution and say, look, what is it that we agreed when we started this thing that we wanted to do? What is it we want to be? How did we want to nourish and support each other? It provides a definition of those principles, a reference point, when you need one. It's why people keep going back and reading their Bibles, you know. There's something there that gets them back in tune with what they thought was important. Well, your marriage is important. What have you got to go look at? It's nice, you know, in the middle of an argument to be able to say, well, what's in the Constitution? And you get a neutral influence between the two people who are fussing. Another concept that can de-stress a marriage is to structure times for intimacy. One of the things that tends to happen after the romance stage has ended is that we start to become very mechanical in our relationships, and we don't seem to have time anymore for dating. The kids came along, careers interfered. We're now so busy and caught up in our individual schedules, we don't seem to have time to talk to one another anymore. And that is the kiss of death. Because if you don't talk to each other, you're going to start talking to some other people, and that's not going to help things. When was the last time you had a real good talk? When was the last walk that you shared? One of the things that Anne does, since both of us have spent some time in England, is, when time permits, to prepare a tea time for us, an hour or so before dinner. And we sit down and we have a cup of tea, and we just talk. It's an amazing kind of transformation. I can come in all jangly and just get very relaxed, and it's a very civilized, structured time that allows us to have a moment of intimacy. Intimacy should be more than, and not limited to, just a sexual encounter. It ought to be a time of being in contact with another human being who understands you and cares for you and respects you with real depth. Have you continued the courtship, I guess is the question. That courtship must continue. There must be a sense of continuity with those earliest emotions which were so important. That would raise questions like, when was the last time flowers were brought from one person to another? Was there a surprise note left? What about some of the other silly things that we do when courting? That keeps a sense of excitement. It keeps a sense of youth. It keeps a sense of happiness in the relationship. And when the kids see that, it's amazing how they tune in and how they like it. When was the last time Mom and Dad had a hug in front of the kids? Kids like to see that. They'll never talk to you about it. They just like it. So what kinds of things are we doing that may help maintain the relationship in all its necessary dimensions? No matter how good the marriage, there are going to be difficulties, and there are going to be conflicts and problems, whether with children or our own changing expectations of each other. In whatever way, there is going to be a steam-letting need, and it's important that the steam, when it is let out of the system, be controlled very carefully. I think we should remember that steam should be depressurized and that it should be released from the marriage relationship. It should not be bottled up. It should not be ignored. The real key is to search for controlled ways in which to let this frustration, anger, hostility, whatever the feeling is, out. Several quick suggestions here may help in terms of overall family stress management. One is, when you sense that there are some serious difficulties, and you've tried to get through a couple of times and you just don't seem to be doing it, get some counseling help at that early stage. When you're first noticing the difficult periods of expression, get together with someone you both respect, someone with whom you can both talk. That might be a minister or a rabbi. It could be a professional marriage counselor. It could be a psychologist. It doesn't matter as to their background if it's a person who is good at questioning and who has had some experience. Let that person be a referee. If you can get it early, there is some hope for salvaging things. The success rate at that point in time is very high. One of the things that we know about professional athletes is that many of them are not reticent about going for counseling help. That is not true of many non-athletic males, who I think have more difficulty with this than do women. And apparently it comes out of the coaching relationship that athletes have had over many, many years of their life. They're accustomed to being in situations where they can't run a play very well, and so they routinely go to a coach and say, "Coach, tell me how to run this. What should I do? What suggestions do you have?" And the coach can get them on the right track because of his greater experience. So when you suggest to an athlete, "Look, you need professional help," a lot of athletes seem to be able to handle that, whereas some of the macho-bound non-athletes seem to have more of a problem with it. Getting coaching help early will have positive results. Another suggestion is that when anger or frustration must be voiced, try and do it constructively. I think one of the best ways to do that is by following certain fight rules. In a book written a few years ago entitled The Intimate Enemy by George Bach, he suggested that it was important in a marriage to follow fight rules. In my own marriage, we've elected to do that. For example, one of the rules that we've adopted is we'll never have an argument or a serious discussion after 8 p.m. Now, the reason for that is simple. You're tired at the end of a day, and when you're tired, you say dumb things that you would never say if you were to sleep on it. Some people say never go to bed angry, you know, talk it out and so on. I disagree with that concept because I think if it's midnight, I'm going to say some idiotic things that I'll regret the next day. Another thing that we do under this concept of fight rules is always set an appointment for the fight. The tendency when you're upset or angry with your spouse is to want to duke it out right there. You want to have your say, and then she responds only louder. So to retaliate, you now say something louder, and the histrionics are starting. You're starting to reach out for something to throw. The situation is out of control. The suggestion is this. If you're going to fight, fight like a professional. If you were going to fight Muhammad Ali or Smokin' Joe Frazier, if you were crazy enough to take on Ernie Shavers or Sugar Ray Leonard, you'd find that none of them would just duke it up with you in the alley. They wouldn't say, hey, let's have it out right here and now. Because any professional knows that when you fight, you must fight by the rules. That means that you set a time. Everybody knows where the fight's going to be and when. And you even have a referee present to make sure that only certain blows are thrown and to step in to protect a fighter in trouble. You always fight within the ropes. You don't go beyond that, and there's only certain ways of fighting allowed. So in setting up an appointment, I may have initiated this unpleasant moment, and Ann will say, aha, Clay, I perceive that you would like to discuss this further. And I say, yes, I would like to have it out with you on this issue. She says, well, next Wednesday at 2 p.m. would be just wonderful on my calendar. And I say, hey, next Wednesday at 2 p.m. would be just peachy keen with me, too. Now, what happens between now and next Wednesday? Well, several possibilities. What usually happens in my situation is I just forget the whole thing the next day. Comes next Wednesday at 2 p.m., Ann says, what is it you would like to talk about? And I mumble something incoherent, and that's that. I've thought better of it, you see. Another possibility is that if it really is an issue, I've got time to get my facts together. She's had time to contact her attorney. And now we go into this ring really ready to do some heavy hitting. Now it's going to be a much more exciting and much more thrilling match. I mean, if you're going to do this thing, do it right. So fight rules may be very helpful. No matter how you express yourself, there are certain limits. Being in a marriage doesn't mean that anything goes. There is in everyone what I call the sensitive line. It's a line beyond which you must not go. A fight doesn't mean you use any weapon, because that is not an acceptable means of confrontation. You know, people who love each other sometimes take cheap shots. We'll say some dumb thing we shouldn't say, and because they love us and care for us, they'll kind of wince and, you know, they'll take it. And then we give them another cheap shot, that's two. Then the third time you're raising questions about their ancestry, and buddy, that is it, and now it's a knockdown drag out. There is a line that you do not go past. And depending on the relationship, that line may be reflected in certain words. That line may be reflected in certain past events that are old business, that are not to be brought up anymore. Don't gunny sack people with all this old trash. Deal with the current issue only. Deal with it in a constructive way. Try to express your anger in a way that will not hurt the other person. You're not trying to hurt them. What you're trying to do is to resolve a conflict. This is somebody you've got to live with for a long time. Don't damage that relationship. If we go back to our professional boxer analogy, you don't ever hit below the belt. Another concept for constructive fighting and constructive steam letting and depressurization is the concept that comes to us from ecology and is known as an ecosystem. An ecosystem is a combination of elements in the environment that are necessary in order to sustain a life form. A few years ago, there was a heated controversy about a little fish called the snail darter. Everybody thought the snail darter was going to become extinct, and this possibility became a real reason for confrontation. I think it's proper that we should be concerned with preserving any species, but my suggestion is that the most endangered species of them all these days is us. We are living in a very difficult time, in a very difficult world, and we have to realize that the ecosystem which protects and shelters us as a species isn't our national government, it is our family. Now, that family can be defined in a variety of ways. That family may mean, literally, blood relatives. It may mean friends, those of you who do not have relatives, but have a constellation of friends. That group of people representing our ecosystem must not be threatened or destroyed. If you destroy the ecology, you destroy the species.